Hello, everyone, and welcome to the end of the week edition of the Daily Friend. I'm joined here by my colleagues Terence Corrigan and Nick Babaya, and I'm Nicholas Lorimer, your host. So tonight is State of the Nation, which is why we're doing this on a Thursday. So we're going to sort of speculate a little bit about that. But let's start off firstly with Terence. You've just returned from a conference on land. Why don't you tell us what happened?
Well, it wasn't a conference on land specifically. I was speaking on land. At the University of the Free State, you know, can say that one comes back somewhat refreshed, that there is some intellectual capacity left in the country. The mood, though, I think, is somewhat pessimistic. Now, on the land front specifically, what strikes me over the last couple of weeks is less developments in the official political process and the way public opinion has been shifting around it. I think for the first time over the last two or three weeks, it has really started to catch on amongst well-heeled suburbanites that this is not something that's going to be confined to people wearing two-tone shirts and khaki feldskoon out in farms. This is about property, which we've been warning about from the beginning, and to their credit, which the government and ANC have never concealed. In fact, if one goes back to early 2018, Melanie Favut, a commentator who was generally very supportive of President Ramaphosa, made this point that everything seemed to point to this being a process that is going to be about urban land before it becomes about farming land. I personally think that both of them stand under threat. But when one of the home financing institutions put out a very helpful tweet saying that, well, you know, if your stuff gets taken, you're still going to have to pay for us. I think that's it, the cat among the pigeons. Mm. And then
I think the IRR's campaign on mortgage holders and the banks specifically has been very effective in revealing just how disastrous this is.
Yes, no, look, absolutely. We've had a number of other bank executives saying, well, you know, we don't really know what to do or how this is going to work out, so we're pretty much not going to do anything. Or to say that, well, whatever happens, you know, we're still expecting to be paid. I think that trying to shift it off, as some have done, as being, well, this is all about unused farms out in the Northern Cape. It's demonstrably not. There was a property lawyer who dismissed this all as fear-mongering and said, well, you know, the residential properties are not part of this process. Well, actually, there's absolutely nothing that justifies that view. Now, perhaps at the moment, the government doesn't have its eye on any specific house, although perhaps it does. But certainly it has indicated that there are, if you look at the ANC in the Northern Cape last year, they identified a list of productive farms that they intend to go after. And I think this puts a big cloud over pretty much every property in the country. We really don't know how, what could come under threat. And we have been going and asking banks, asking financial institutions, insurance companies, where do you stand on this?
And so far we've had not a great response.
No.
Some institutions have responded, and some of them are taking the issue seriously, but still haven't made enough moves towards, I think, opposing.
Right. And if you look, if you look at the submission that submissions on the issue, which do go back, which actually go back quite a few years, from the banking sector, it's very clear that the focus of their interventions are their own institutional interests. So there was a suggestion that if property is confiscated at below market value, the government should sort of guarantee the difference. But that becomes something that banks would then inherit, so they don't take a knock. Been a great deal said about the social responsibility of business, and I think this is an issue where business actually needs to show whether it takes it seriously or that's just so much PR spin.
Mm-hmm. Nick, what's your take?
Yeah, you know, I think our campaign is actually starting to really heat up at the moment. I think that question about what's going to happen if my property, I still have a bond on my house and my house gets expropriated, and a lot of the general consensus from what we've been able to find is that nothing will change. You'll still have to pay back your bond. I mean, that's pretty much what Nedbank said to us. Nedbank was one of the few companies that responded to us. And they said, because nothing in the expropriation bill makes provision for that kind of situation, therefore the contract law doesn't change, therefore you'll still be liable to pay back a bond. And I mean, that's like a really, really bizarre situation to have something expropriated like that and then you still have to pay back money. I mean, economically, that's totally unviable. The Nedbank CEO, Mike Brown, said that if expropriation without compensation goes through, it could create, quote, a classical banking crisis. Not quite sure what a classical banking crisis means, whether that's a certain kind of banking
crisis. Well, it's not good. I think we can...
No, I mean, we exactly. Know that. Certainly it's not good. I understand that much. I may not be an accountant, but I can understand that much. But then what I don't understand, I mean, this obviously is going to be the case because no society on earth is meant to operate without property rights. Okay, this is something human beings have had since we learned to use tools. There's actually a great description of it in Davy Roet's book, Tax Lies and Red Tape, where he goes back to like the origin of property rights in hunter-gatherer Homo sapiens. But if you don't have them, then you have bizarre situations like this. And I think, you know, we need to start asking these hard questions because the real implications of expropriation without compensation of the South African economy, and I would say in particular the financial system, are going to be so dire that this is the kind of thing that you should be marching in the streets about and losing your mind about.
But and that's particularly worrying because the financial sector has been one of the few parts of the economy that sort of kept going through the dark period of the Zuma years.
Yeah, I mean, something which I have come to learn now is the extent to which big business really tries to cozy up to big government. And it's quite disheartening sometimes. But the thing with businesses is that they're always going to look after their own interests, just as Terence has said now, which is reasonable. The problem is that when you give the government so much power, all of a sudden their own interests start becoming much less about serving people and making a profit off that and much more about trying to cozy up to the ultimate arbiter, which is the government.
So that they don't have their assets expropriated.
Right. Mm. Exactly. And this is unfortunately what rent-seeking is. I mean, I think it's a kind of rent-seeking, certainly. It's trying to make money off something that makes money immorally. But if people are always going to look after their interests, then this is what's going to happen.
You and Herman visited APSA yesterday. How did that go?
Yeah, that was a very interesting experience. So I'll tell the whole story. So the first thing is that we've been trying to arrange a meeting with APSA because they didn't respond to our letter.
Or our phone calls.
You actually did. Yes. I mean, you. Why don't you just tell us the extent to
which
you tried to
contact them? When I attempted to call them several times, I attempted to get through to someone in customer service, and I was just sent round and round and round, and eventually I got through to someone who promised that they would call us back. And then, of course, they never did.
Yeah, they love that, don't they?
But when they saw the IRR's media statement saying that we were going to be arriving in their offices to deliver the open letter, because, of course, they didn't respond to our electronic version, they were very quick to respond.
Geez, yeah. I mean, that changed everything, didn't it? We should do that in future. We should just send out a press release that's coming over. It's like when you go over to your neighbor's house without calling them before.
It's like calling that you're going to your neighbor's house through a megaphone.
Yeah. And telling all the journalists. So basically, we arrived outside the APSA headquarters in the Joburg CBD. And we parked there. And outside the building, there were probably about 12 security guards. And like they came up to us and they said, what you guys doing here, blah, blah, blah. Herman was there. And then he goes up to Herman. And he's like, are you Mr. Pretorius? And they had been like waiting for our arrival. Now, we later found out why this is. And that being a big bank, APSA unfortunately sometimes has mobs of people in red overalls throwing rocks at their building. So you can understand why they were a little bit timid. But they found out it was just, myself, Herman, Big Daddy Liberty, and Alex was filming. And it was actually incredibly cordial. They were extremely nice to us, and we met the head of communications, and we went into one of those little meeting rooms, and we expressed our concerns with him, and we gave him the letter. And he basically, you know, explained their point of view, and they will give us an official response in writing, which we'll publish. So I won't say too much, but what I will say is that one of the things he said to us is, we basically share the same concerns as you. And he went to go and talk about how much APSA has in assets. And when I'm saying assets, I'm talking about people that owe money to them. You know, in accounting, I think that's viewed as an asset, and the liability is the opposite. But of course, if that money can't be paid back, even if you still are obligated to pay it back, then that asset doesn't really become an asset.
Becomes worth nothing, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an asset worth nothing. I mean, I don't know if you could even, I don't know what it would be, a liability. We see how bizarre this is. You don't have property rights. The whole thing goes out the window.
Yeah, look, I think that something to bear in mind here is that on the memo accompanying the draft constitutional amendment, there's a remark about financial implications to the state, and they say none.
Really?
None. Well, no, implications of the state. There's been no kind of socioeconomic impact
assessment
done. And, there was also a question posed in Parliament last year, are you talking to the banks about this? And the answer was no. And these are nice, direct, binary answers.
That was asked by, I think, a DA MP.
Yeah, Mike Waters.
I know precisely the one you're talking Great. About.
So, look, I get the strong sense that that there's a great deal of thought that has not gone into this.
It feels a lot like a sort of mugger who's just sort of bashing you over the head with a stick.
But the problem is ideologically they've lurched down this highway to hell. Mm. And I think it becomes very difficult, to turn around. Unfortunately, I think that large business in South Africa, particularly those that have the ability to shield themselves by looking for opportunities elsewhere, will do that before they will stand up and protect their clients.
I think Anglo Gold has just exited the market.
Yeah. One of the more interesting things I saw an editorial in one of the newspapers, if I recall correctly, by one of the large property developers about citizenship by investment overseas. Interesting.
Yes, no, there's a lot of that going on right now. So obviously we're going to have to watch this, and please do support the IRR's fight against land. Against land expropriation. You can SMS your name to 32823 and sign up to become a friend of the Institute to help us make your voice heard. So the next part, I think, is we're going to talk about the State of the Nation address, which is tonight. Nick, what do you think the President will say and what do you think he should say?
Yeah, well, every single time I hear the State of the Nation address, there's always two things I'm looking for. The first is if the EFF's going to disrupt it, because that's always quite fun to watch. No, I mean, it's a terrible thing, but it has entertainment value, undoubtedly. But the second thing is, I think, we're probably going to hear a lot of positives from Ramaphosa. I think it's always a sort of a platform for him, because so many people are watching, to try and portray like a rosy, hopeful kind of image.
Last time we had new cities and high-speed rail and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, smart cities.
Smart cities, him. Yes.
And the fourth industrial revolution is always mentioned. This is like living in a dream world. I don't know how anyone can, within their right mind, talk about these sorts of things when you can't even fulfill our electricity supply. Mm. What is it that Andre de Ruyter said the last set of load shedding was about?
Was necessary to...
Because there was too much supply and we... No, too much demand and we did not have enough supply.
Yeah.
Well, that's what every...
Yeah, that's been the problem all along, hasn't it?
That is the problem all along. And if you want to start talking about high-speed rail, I mean, I'm just imagining in my mind an electric high-speed rail train going at 300 kilometers an hour, and then suddenly there's a power cut, and the thing comes grinding to a halt. No, well, I mean, the whole thing is that you need to fix the window before you repaint the whole house. Mm, and we're putting the cart before the horse here. And I think Ramaphosa is really... He like envisions this kind of first world South Africa, and he often talks about it that way. But they're actually just living in a dream world if they think that's going to happen. If you don't deal with the fundamental problems that this country is facing, and that is to say that we have a bloated civil service because it became politicized in the 90s, and we're now feeling the proper problems with that because we can't fire anyone. Because if we fire anyone, then the ANC goes into turmoil. Then the ANC loses votes. Then the ANC loses power. And that's the absolute last thing that will ever be allowed to happen. There's that. You could talk about the state-owned entities, but if we can't get the basics right, then all of this talk about the fourth industrial revolution, smart cities, all of it's absolute rubbish. And you actually need to take that into account when you're listening to this. Whenever he says something like this, you should actually just ask one question to yourself. How is that possible if my property rights are not guaranteed? Mm-hmm. That's the only question you need to ask for the owner, because this is the guy who is proposing to take away property rights for his country, but he also wants the fourth industrial revolution.
And it's not just sort of liberals like us who are criticizing the state of things. There was an interesting article, an opinion piece by Imbazima Shaloa, who is the former ANC Premier of Gauteng, who left to join to create COPE with Masiwa Lokota and then fell out with him and disappeared from politics. But he wrote an opinion article where he echoed sentiments that are sort of similar to yours. I don't think he necessarily agrees with the prescriptions that the IRR would propose. But the problem, I think, was identified with him as well. He also kind of talked about this idea of the sort of false dawn of Cyril Ramaphosa not really changing much and not having the courage of his convictions. He compared him to our previous presidents and said that at least all of them, even when they had terrible ideas, were willing to push through some changes. Now, I think that's kind of missing the point here, which is that Ramaphosa is pushing through changes. They're just terrible ones, like EWC, like NHI, like prescribed assets. Terence, what do you think?
Look, I think I don't have an enormous amount to add to what Nick's just said. I think that, well, Nick 1, Nick 2.
There's a tall Nick, squashed Nick.
As you wish. You said it, I didn't. I think that we could probably take last year's State of the Nation and, make a few cosmetic changes and boom, we've got something that can be, rolled out. I have noticed in the commentary over the last couple of months, just since the beginning of the year, there's been a lot of this. It's time for action, step up, Mr. President. It's time to lead. As good as all good debating school stuff, but I don't see much of that coming out. There may be some reference to an imminent deal about using pension funds, which I think on the property rights thing, is something that we should also be concerned about. As the president said, we have depleted our resources, and now we have to find other sources. Now it's interesting that whose resources have been depleted, and where we're going to find these alternatives. I don't really have good news. I mean, when I made my presentation in Bloemfontein, that's how I started off. I said, I don't have good news for you on this front. It was interesting just to see the level of frustration. And these are people who do not have the same, let's say, ideological axe to grind as one might expect from us, because we do come from a particular point of view. But I imagine we will see homage and invocation of the capable state, or the developmental state. But it's a dream. It's an illusion. Dipping back into history. I don't know if you ever saw that that series, The World at War.
I think so. Yeah.
You're right. There's an episode about the fall of France. And they interview a guy who was in the French High Command. He said, "We had these wonderful plans to seize oil fields in Baku," and he said, "But these are all fanciful. They were sort of hoping to hold off a war in sort of 1941, 1942, and events just overtook them." And I think the mindset is actually not that dissimilar.
Mm-hmm. I think the big thing that he needs to talk about and probably won't is the gutting of state-owned enterprises, because regardless of all of the ANC's ideological projects right now, the cold hard reality that we're running out of money is going to really hit home. And if things like privatizing SAA, slimming down Eskom's workforce, all those sort of things, which in a lot of ways are not actually that big jumps to make. I mean, SAA is, it's very difficult to argue that it's something for the people and not for the sort of middle classes and the upper classes to enjoy.
And there's sometimes a developmental argument that an airline like that, by flying routes which maybe aren't the most profitable, has a net economic impact that's much bigger than how much it costs.
Something that is difficult to demonstrate.
Yeah, well, I think you could have made that argument maybe 15 years ago. But the fact of the matter is that SAA takes up such a small fraction of the South African civil aviation market now. I don't know. I heard a figure. It was like 10 or 15% now. Quite frankly, if you want to fly anywhere, and flying is expensive, if you fly from Cape Town to Joburg, you're easily going to pay 1,000 rand. Actually, the cheapest way to do that is on a privately owned low-cost airline like SAF Air, which is now becoming incredibly successful. Mm. It's actually quite interesting to think that South Africa has got the most on-time airline in the world. That's SAF Air. I actually, look, there are things in their favor which make it easier for them. Like, we don't have big distances between our cities or whatever.
We don't have the traffic that a lot of American airports have.
Exactly. And that's and in Europe, it's precisely the same problem. But yeah, I've never heard a good argument to keep SAF Air state-owned. But I think the whole thing is that there's very little intention, really, from the ANC to make SOEs like SAF Air and Eskom efficient and profitable and running well, as just like the private sector does. These are much more like jobs programs. I'm sure you've heard, I think it's Milton Friedman, he sometimes tells this analogy where an economist is walking through the Soviet Union and he sees a whole bunch of workers digging trenches, but they're digging these trenches with these old like spades and old tools used 100 years ago instead of high-tech machinery. And the guy said, why are these people using such horrible tools? And he says, well, you know, you don't understand. This is not meant to build a trench. This is actually a jobs program. We're getting these people to build this thing for a job. And he says, well, if you wanted a jobs program, you should take away the spade and give them teaspoons. That's the whole thing. This is kind of a jobs program. Mm. And I think they see that as a worthwhile end. Whereas if you have a stake in the company and you're in the private sector, you actually have to keep your head afloat, because if you run out of money, there's no more bailouts. Mm. And you just starve because you don't have enough money.
Well, I mean, the state is really going to have to start coming to face with the reality that there is no more money if it doesn't plug the holes in these SOEs.
Well,
we're looking at in the sort of the next 10 years, maybe even significant debt problems, which will engulf the country.
Well, you know, I think that the counter to that is there is more money. It's just not where it used to be. You know, there's pension funds, there's your savings.
Of course.
You know,
and eventually, the value of your rands. Because one day, the end result of all of this is that when there's no more pensions to prescribe, then one day they're going to just have to print more money. And then we end up with a hyperinflation situation.
And then, well, that's also not a great situation for the government, because things get very dodgy and you start removing presidents via coup, like... like Zimbabwe has done.
But you know, I think that one of the unspoken tragedies here is that the ANC has, to a large extent, just run out of ideas. Mm. You know, while ideology is a big driver of EWC, I just wonder whether there's any sort of long term game plan. You know, even by those who are in favour of it. You know, once we have this power, what do? We use this power. Then what do? Well, then we have used the power.
And of course, the EFF is showing that it is really just part of the ANC's universe of ideas. It's just the radical fringes of the ANC. It's identical. It's just acquire more state power, have more aggressive affirmative action, target minorities, throw the state control over everything, which is the same stuff the radical sides of the ANC have been saying for decades. There isn't a single new idea in that entire sort of political universe. No new way of engaging with anything. And I think, you know, the sort of the bill is about to come due on a lot of those things.
It would be interesting to ask some like ANC MPs, if we ever met them one day, where do you find ideological difference with Julius Malema? Like, where do you significantly disagree with him? Somebody should, a journalist, if journalists had any guts, should actually ask that question. But of course, our journalists don't, because they just suck up. We need Mehdi Hassan, actually.
A lot of it is, I think, largely personality driven and access to resource driven. But let's not speculate about that anymore. I think that's all we really have to say for this. We'll have to see what comes in the State of the Nation. Perhaps we will be pleasantly surprised. If you keep your
that would be wonderful.
If you keep your expectations low, you can be nothing but pleasantly surprised. So thank you very much for watching us. We'll catch you on the next edition of the Daily Friend Show.